During the time of the Buddha, it's said that he was visited by King Kosala, King Pasenadi of Kosala, beg your pardon. And we're told that he knocked on the door of the Buddha's kuti and then went in and bowed with his head on the ground, kissed the Buddha's feet as he wrapped both his hands around the Buddha's feet, and then he announced his name. And then the Buddha asked him, he said, "Great King, what reason do you give for showing to this body such profound humility and for offering to it such loving devotion?" And so the king replies and he says, "To express my grateful thanks, Lord, that is the reason." So then the king goes on to express his gratitude to the Buddha for all of the exceptional qualities that the Buddha manifests throughout his life, throughout his years of teaching, and also for the actual teachings that King Pasenadi had received, and of course he had developed a great deal of benefit from those teachings. And then when he had finished expressing his gratitude, then it said that he got up, bowed, and said, "I must go now, I have work to do," and then he left. So what touches me about this sutta was that King Pasenadi made this special trip to see the Buddha purely to express his gratitude, and then he left. That was the entire purpose of his mission, of his visit, just to express his gratitude. The Buddha spoke no words other than to ask King Pasenadi why he had come. So there was no teaching from the Buddha or any of the Buddha's attendants, arhants that would go along with him. And this is quite unusual because if you read the suttas, more often than not, the Buddha gives some kind of a teaching, or one of his sidekicks, one of the other arhants, would give a teaching. So this is quite an unusual sutta for us to read. So it's purely about expressing gratitude to the Buddha for his teachings. So this is what we're going to explore a little bit tonight, this quality of gratitude and how helpful and important it is for us to bring to the forefront of consciousness from time to time in our practice, and then to acknowledge its presence and then express it in some way. Sometimes it's just a simple kind of bow from the heart of gratitude. Sometimes we express it verbally. Sometimes we express it in terms of an offering of some sort. But it's really good from time to time to get in touch with this quality of gratitude. So gratitude can be evoked or roused within us intentionally by reflecting on some good that's come to us in our life, perhaps where we've been afforded the opportunity to learn something, or somebody has been really supportive to us in a beautiful, wholesome way in our life. And of course, these lessons can come to us from people in all walks of life, all situations in life, and of course, not least of all, the Buddha's teachings. Then too, there's a gratitude that can arise quite naturally, just as life is unfolding, in the moments of understanding the truth of our existence. At these times, there's a kind of a quiet gratitude that comes with this understanding. And this usually comes about in those times when there's no wanting, there's nothing lacking in our life, where we really just quietly feel the fullness or the perfection of the moment, just as things are. You know, it's kind of beyond words. And so in those moments, we can get in touch with this sense of gratitude. And it's however the moment is. You know, we get in touch with the purity, the simplicity of the moment, however it might be. And in those moments when there's nothing wanting and there's nothing lacking, you'll notice that this quality of gratitude very naturally can seep up to the forefront of consciousness. When we recognize the gift that we have as human beings, this tremendous opportunity to reach our full potential, to experience and live a beautiful life, a life that has a quiet joy in it, that comes through the understanding of the Dharma. And of course, this is a life with less and less suffering in it because of the practice. Of course, then we do feel a gratitude for what we have. We have the Dharma that gives us the opportunity and the possibility of reaching our potential. But very often for many of us, what is our tendency? We tend to look where we're deficient, don't we? Where we're deficient in our practice. Of course, and this comes about at the expense of not noticing the wholesome that's there too. And of course, why does this happen? Often, what do we hear a lot about? Uprooting those defilements. And so, of course, that's where we turn our attention. And more often than not, that's what we see a lot of. And so because of that, we can sometimes lose sight of the good that's there too, the wholesome qualities that are there, because our focus is on seeing the greed and the hatred and the delusion that's there. So it's good, once again, to remind ourselves to look to the good. Look at where we're proficient rather than deficient. So what we can also do is look at the fact that here we are. We're here, we are practicing the Dharma. We're putting ourselves in a position to come to learn and to understand more deeply. And so we are rising to the occasion. Whatever that occasion may be, we're not shying away from the moment. And this takes courage, so we can appreciate this about ourselves. The Dharma is available to us, and we're using it. We're using it in a really beautiful onward leading way towards the end of suffering. To come into contact with the Dharma and be practicing it in the way that we are only comes about as the result of extremely wholesome actions. And many of us forget this. We don't come here to practice the Dharma as the result of unwholesome actions. We're brought here as the result of wholesome actions. So this is really good for us to reflect on. And the fact that we're now here practicing, of course, is going to bring further wholesome results. So this too is something to feel grateful for. Sometimes we don't see those results, but that we're here now will bring about wholesome results in the future. So a natural outcome of reflecting in this way, and this is why it's important to reflect in this way, is that there is a natural upwelling of the wish to pay respects and to express our gratitude in the same way that King Pasenadi did. When we see how much suffering that there is in the world, it also helps us to put things into perspective, to really feel a sense of having enough, a sense of even sufficiency, and as a matter of fact, even a sense of abundance in our lives, the sense of goodness and the opportunity that we have. And out of reflecting in this way, once again, it supports us to do our practice for the benefit of all beings. To acknowledge and express appreciation for all of the good that's in life, rather than focusing on the negative aspects of life, of course, uplifts the mind. So it's helpful for us to be reminded of this repeatedly. because it can help to transform a perhaps a cynical attitude of mind or just a plain down mental state that we may have, where we may tend to get bogged down by life. It can transform mental states like this. So we really work towards deliberately bringing in the good. At the same time, I'm not suggesting a kind of an attachment to the happy or the pleasant states either, as though we're kind of looking through rose-tinted glasses. So it's not that we're ignoring the painful aspects of life either. It's not as though we're saying, oh, everything is wonderful. It's more like we're opening to the totality. That's what it's about. So let's take a look at some areas in our life and our practice where gratitude might arise, because there's quite a range. Some are more obvious and some are fairly obscure. So let's take a look at some of these possible areas of gratitude. It's possible that even the most painful of situations, if seen with understanding, has space for gratitude to arise. And I don't mean in the way one's told as a child to eat your Brussels sprouts because they're good for you. I don't mean in that way at all, but in a true and a genuine way. And some of you may have experienced this over the last couple of weeks too. So let's take a possible situation that may have arisen. Perhaps a physical discomfort, some bodily discomfort that you may have experienced, or some mental turmoil or agitation that may have come to the mind, mental state. And then you've heard the instructions. Just bring mindfulness to the fact that this mental state is here. Bring awareness to it. You don't need to get rid of it. Relax, open to it. Simply be mindful of that being there and watch what happens to it. With time, you might begin to notice its changing nature, and so on. We've been saying this quite frequently throughout the last 2 weeks. And then what might happen as time goes by, few days, few more days, suddenly you begin to get the hang of it. And goodness, this difficult mental state arises and the light of mindfulness is shone on it. We can simply be aware of that difficult mental state or the physical discomfort in the body, and there's no suffering anymore in the mind. We're just able to be there, knowing that as it is, and we may see it disappear, fade, vaporize, change. And with this, there is a waft of gratitude that arises within the heart, right there. So this is one experience where, having worked through a difficult situation, one where we've transcended one difficult situation, it can allow for a gratitude to arise in the heart, both for our own skill at working with it and for the Dharma Buddha's instructions, because we see that they work. It's as though during these times of difficulty, it can be a mild difficulty, it can be a much more acute difficulty, where it can be very helpful to ask ourselves the question, what is the teaching being offered here? It's a very helpful question to ask ourselves. Because if we're not able to receive that teaching in that particular difficult scenario, then it's not possible for us to feel any gratitude. In fact, we feel the opposite, don't we? We feel a kind of a resentment or aversion because that difficulty has arisen. So instead of the question being, what is the teaching being offered here? More often than not, the question is, why is this happening to me? Or, you know, it comes from that place in the mind. Or why is this being done to me? You can feel the difference, can't you? The difference in the quality of heart, the quality of mind. The one is open, receptive, spacious. The other is contracted, tight, closed in, closed down, taking it personally, the second one. Why is this happening to me? We're taking it personally. Instead, can we see these difficult situations as another opportunity for wisdom and compassion to begin to grow within us? Because when there is this sense of balanced understanding within the heart-mind, then gratitude covers all experiences, not just the pleasant, the full range. And this shows the beginning of a maturity of mind growing within us. If you reflect on times of difficulty that you've had in the past, maybe the distant past or not too distant past, you will see that they have brought some strength of heart and understanding into your life. Sometimes there's situations in our life that have been very, very difficult. And maybe a year or two or a chunk of time later, when we reflect back on them, then we can see that we've learned something from them, that we've grown from those difficult situations. It's often very difficult to see, of course, in the midst of that particular difficulty. So it's in hindsight often that we reflect and we see, oh yes, I can see now, I did learn. Because of this, I've now learned to respond in such and such a way, and so on. So these difficult situations that we've worked through and learned something over time, they also allow for a trust and a staying power to arise in times of subsequent difficulty, in times of new difficulty. Because now we realize with some understanding that even though this is a new difficulty that might be arising, we know, wait a minute, a while back I had a difficulty and I hung in there with it, I stayed with it, and although it was difficult, it was okay. I survived it, I've learned something from it, some wisdom arose from it, and so now in this current new difficulty, if you take a look, there'll be a thin strand of wisdom in there. You have to look for it though. A thin strand of wisdom. And that thin strand of wisdom is, all right, I've done it in the past. I know I can do it again. Just give it a little bit of time. I know this will be impermanent too. It's okay. And so out of this, it allows for us to hang in with the new difficulty. In other words, we see a little chink of light in the darkness. And here we can feel a gratitude. There's a little bit of light in the darkness that kind of takes us by the hand to support us with this new difficulty. So moving on to some other kinds of scenarios where gratitude can arise. The Buddha spoke of two kinds of rare and precious people in the world. He said they're those who are benefactors, that is, people who help us and support us and others, just out of the goodness, out of the kindness of their hearts. And this is done for noble reasons. And of course, a prime example of this is the Buddha. And then there's the second kind of rare and precious person. And this is someone who is grateful for the help that others have given to them and appreciates what's been given to them and then wants to repay this support that they've received in some way or another. It was interesting to me that this is a rare being. It's a rare person who feels gratitude for support that's been given to them. Let's think for a moment now of our parents, our mothers and our fathers. Can we feel a gratitude for the support that they have given us over the years? And when we talk about our parents, remember, or all situations, we're talking about we want to look to the good. Because, of course, many of us have had difficulties through our upbringing and our childhood, but this is about looking to the good, so that we can express or feel some sense of gratitude in our hearts for the fact that they did the best that they could as they brought us up. So we can feel some gratitude here. Even if there was much pain in our lives as we were growing up, is it possible for us to still feel a gratitude? And this can be very hard for us to get sometimes, because now that we've had this difficult upbringing, this is often what brings us to the Dharma. It is this difficult upbringing that we've had. It's made us turn and look at what our human existence is all about, and has almost propelled us towards the Dharma, so that we can come to understand what it's all about. So in other words, we use our difficult upbringing as our path to freedom. So out of this, we can see that we can feel a sense of gratitude for whatever our upbringing was. Because once again, it's another opportunity for us to develop wisdom and compassion. Then what about our teachers? Those that support us with, you know, their patience, their kindness, their compassion through all of the ups and downs in our practice. And I'm not talking about our most recent teachers. Some of us have been practicing for many, many years, and sometimes even our very first teacher might have been someone who maybe introduced us to the Dharma and then moved off somewhere, and then we picked up another teacher and moved on to several other teachers. It's also important to feel a sense of gratitude for that very first person that introduced us to the Dharma. Maybe they gave us a book. Maybe they said, you know, I go to a sitting group, why don't you come along? And so we can just begin to reflect on this person too and feel a sense of gratitude here. On one of my 3 months retreats, just very naturally, I began to reflect on the very first person, my very first teacher in South Africa. And I hadn't thought about him for a long, long time. And a deep welling up of gratitude arose for him, because it was quite a difficult scenario, and I'll tell you what happened. He came to live, this is my first teacher, came to live with me and my partner for about 6 months, as he was in a kind of a phase of transition in his life. And of course, he was a fervent practitioner, and he would get up at 5 o'clock every morning. And so he said, come on, we're all going to get up at 5 a.m. every morning, and we're going to sit together. And so I remember this very clearly. I was going through a really difficult time, you know, very difficult phase in my life. I had a 9-to-5 job, and I remember him rapping on the bedroom door loudly and not wanting to get up. It was winter, it was freezing cold. You don't have sort of heating indoors in South Africa. It was very cold, and I felt resentful and annoyed at him for being so persistent. But I would get out of bed and I would do my sitting, and this was daily over a 6 month or so thereabouts period. I felt, when I remembered this, a deep sense of gratitude for his persistence in dragging us out of bed, because that allowed for a momentum to develop in my practice. And out of that, I developed my own sense of motivation and could, you know, keep myself going in the practice. I don't know if that would have happened if it wasn't for him, you know, waking us up, rapping on that door at 5 a.m. So this deep sense of gratitude arose, and at the end of my 3 month retreat, when I got home, I wrote him a letter. I'm not suggesting that anybody do anything like this, but this is what I was moved to do, to voice it, to express it in some way. When the Buddha was liberated, he too wanted to express his gratitude to his first two teachers. And so what he wanted to do was to teach them the path to liberation. But unfortunately, they had both died, his first two teachers. But the fact that this is what he wanted to do, I've always felt is very touching. This was going to be his expression of gratitude to teach them the path to liberation. But it takes a while sometimes for this feeling of gratitude to arise, as I've said. And this is another example in my own practice where it did take a while to arise. In the early days, once again, of my practice in South Africa, we had an American teacher in the Tibetan tradition come out to give us some teachings in Cape Town, and he was there for several weeks. And then soon after he arrived, I offered to cook a meal for him as an offering of dana. And so it was on this particular occasion where I spent some time with him and cooked him this meal that I became aware that he smoked cigarettes, and even worse, he drank Coca-Cola. And at this stage in my life, I was 22, 23 or something, and very idealistic in my youthful mind and very health conscious, very health conscious. I didn't smoke, and I definitely didn't drink Coca-Cola then. I drink it now, but I didn't drink it then. So, of course, I was pretty disgusted. How could he? Absolutely, how could he? Yet, it was this teacher who introduced me to the practice of bodhicitta. So I'll explain just very briefly what this is. We've been doing it in the morning reflection, the morning sharing, the dedication of the practice. Basically, it's doing the reflection to offer our practice and do the practice for the benefit of all beings. It's called having the attitude of heart-mind of a Buddha. And that's to do the practice for the benefit of all beings. Now, he was the one that taught me this practice, and I began to incorporate it into my practice from then. This was in the early 80s. And I found it very, very helpful, very beneficial to me in my practice through all the years of the difficulties and the ups and downs that I went through, because it helped me to not take the difficulties that I was going through, it helped me to not take them so personally, in as much as could I recognize that these were the difficulties that all beings experienced and were going through, and could I be there opening to them for the benefit of all beings. This was how I worked with them. So it was very, very supportive for me, because it helped for me to not take it so personally and therefore be able to open to those difficulties. So in hindsight, I had tremendous gratitude for this teacher, even though I had been rather kind of snooty and judgmental of him in terms of his lifestyle. So you can see how the judging mind, or you can call it the conceited mind, that's the mind that's got a lot of its own opinions, how it can really limit our ability to receive the good that others offer us. But it can also get in the way of us receiving our own goodness. Because conceit is not just about having a sense of pride and being opinionated about other people and how good we are, our special diet, and how bad they are. It can also be a negative opinion about ourselves. And so if we think negatively of ourselves, there's very little room for us to feel appreciation and gratitude towards ourselves. And this is a really important thing for us to begin to instill. This very same teacher also gave me a koan, a kind of a koan, which I also felt very grateful for. He said to me, because he gave each of us a different koan, a very unusual kind of teaching that he did. He said to me, "This is your koan. Nothing you do," and it was for me to say I, nothing I do will make me deserve the Dharma. So this is my koan. Nothing I do will make me deserve the Dharma. And I got the answer. I understood right away what he was saying. We all deserve the Dharma. We don't have to do anything to deserve it. We deserve the Dharma by virtue of the fact that we're human beings here on the earth. There's nothing special we need to do. We are deserving. We are deserving of the Dharma. So it's to see if we can begin to receive this and acknowledge this. Yes, we do all deserve this Dharma. Then where else might we begin to feel the sense of gratitude? What other scenario? What about our fellow yogis on retreat, right here? We can begin to feel a gratitude here too, and perhaps you do and have been. They can really inspire us to keep going when we're feeling maybe a little bit low mentally, or, for example, perhaps we've gotten into a little bit of our own kind of a routine of, at the end of the Dharma talk, for example, maybe that's the time we go to bed, just for example. So then one day we're walking out, we're just about to walk out, go out to our room, and out of the corner of our eye, here we see somebody quietly walking, just walking gently back and forth, back and forth. And suddenly we think, huh, you know what? That's a really good idea. I think I'll do a little bit of walking, just 20 minutes. And we do this not out of competition. It comes out of a sense of real inspiration. This person quietly minding their own business, doing their practice, has just inspired us. So we can feel a gratitude here. Just, you know, expanded our horizons a little bit, just by 20 minutes. It can come about in other ways too. On another occasion in my own practice, one of the years of my the 3 month retreats, on this particular retreat, I was feeling a tremendous sense of fear. Fear in the body, I could feel it contracted, fear in the mind, so there's a lot of tight, contracted energy. And I was working with this to the best of my ability, learning to open and allow it and being all the things that we've been hearing here, gentle and so on. And I would do my walking practice in the dining hall, and I could feel I was stiff and really very, very tight. And I would see another yogi. He had come over the several years that I had done these long retreats, this yogi was always there too. And he liked to do his walking in the dining hall as well. And I would watch this guy, this man. He was so relaxed, very settled back, and he would just kind of amble along in a very relaxed, kind of languid way, half smile on his face, kind of hands in his pockets, just kind of, you know, slowly meandering back and forth in his walking practice. He would wear a black polotech, and just embossed on the back at the top near the neck was the word in white, about an inch big, Aspen. And I always kind of wondered whether he had just jetted in from Aspen. And you know, now he was just languidly doing his walking practice back and forth. This individual was so helpful for me in my own practice. Because just by looking at him, I kind of imbibed by osmosis a little bit of, I got the hint of how to relax a little bit. Just, you know, settle back, relax, just a tiny bit. And so I have felt a gratitude for him over these years because he helped me silently, just doing his own thing, and just by me kind of seeing how he was, I got the hint a little bit. So there's so many ways where we can feel supported by our fellow yogis, and it's an opportunity for gratitude to arise. Then what about our friends? Our friends out in the world, those that support us in a wholesome and onward leading way. Sometimes we can take the help of others, like our friends, we can take it for granted. And it's such a gift. It's such a gift when we can really recognize that to have a friend who is trustworthy, someone that can support us in times of difficulty, times of need, where we just actually need a supportive ear. Just simply for them to be able to hear what we're saying. Maybe our complaints, our little moans about something, for example, or perhaps our vulnerable moments, that they're just there to hear, without judgment, without giving us any advice, just there so that we can be heard. This is a rare person that can be there for us in this way, and really worthy of feeling a gratitude towards. Because listening is an art. It really is an art. When we can truly be there for another, truly listen to somebody else, just open-heartedly, when we're able to do that, we're giving the other person the gift of letting them be exactly who they are in those moments. We're giving them the space to be able to voice what's going on with them. And sometimes that's all somebody needs, for them to be able to understand their own process. It's as though we're just giving them space to hear themselves too. And out of that, an understanding can arise for themselves. And so it really is a gift. So then we can take it a step further. Is it possible that we can learn to be our own trusted friend and listen to ourselves wisely? And this is a process, because sometimes we don't know if it's wisdom. It takes a while to just feel, to let it settle within us, so that we can learn to come from this place of listening deeply within at our own process, so that we can learn to come from a place of wisdom and compassion. This is both a practice and an art for us too, so that we can be there for our own unfolding. So many of us feel bad about who we are. Perhaps our spirits were crushed when we were growing up as children. So to be able to learn to voice what's going on with us, to be able to do this is really, really helpful. So that we can openly begin to learn to slowly let go of all those fears and different aspects of ourselves that we've been holding on. And this might mean that we learn to take a small and wise risk. Maybe this is what it means that we need to do, as we learn to trust ourselves and listen to ourselves, be our own trusted friend. In my own practice, a little scenario just like this arose. Growing up as a child, manners were very important. Say please, say thank you, don't be greedy, don't take too much, think of everybody else, be considerate, be polite. This is how I was brought up. It's kind of a British upbringing. That's my ancestry. So this was the be all and end all. This was, highest importance. So one time on retreat, one of these long retreats, at breakfast time, there are 100 people on these long retreats. So in line at breakfast, and I get to the table to help myself, and they've made cookies for breakfast. So they're there on the tray. And suddenly it arises for me, I want a big cookie. But you know, most of the cookies, they're kind of mostly the same size. Okay, mostly. But there's always one or two that's a little bit bigger. So I decide I want a big cookie. And of course, you know, be polite, don't be greedy, think of the others. And I thought, you know, I want a big cookie, and I'm going to take a big cookie. Right away, I felt that 100 pairs of eyes were watching me. Of course, nobody even noticed, but that's what we feel, you know, when we've been kind of held back by all our, you know, fears. This is how it felt. But I took the risk. I took the big cookie and I wasn't arrested. It was fine. And this was a little teaching for me. I didn't ever have to do it again. Didn't matter. It was big cookie, small cookie, any cookie. But what it was about was letting go of the inner fear and kind of, you know, self-consciousness that was there related to, oh, can I, can't I, should I, shouldn't I? That's what it was about. So this is what I'm talking about, taking a small and wise risk where we can slowly begin to let go of some of those fears that may be there. So then what about another scenario where we can feel gratitude? Because, you know, all of these examples that I'm giving you, the result of them is that gratitude comes about. With the cookies, for example, the fact that I had the courage to go through that allowed for a gratitude for my willingness to go through with it, and once again for the Dharma. So all of these are about bringing gratitude to the fore. But there's another scenario where it might be very hard for us to even consider the possibility of gratitude arising. It can almost sound like a contradiction in terms. What about when we're admonished? Is it possible for us to feel a gratitude when we've been admonished by somebody? You wouldn't think so, but it is possible. Because this can be very difficult for us. It hurts when we've been admonished, doesn't it? Oh, it's painful. Especially if we're the kind of person that doesn't like to make mistakes. Then it's really, really hard. But you know, it's a good kind of a hurt. It's a kind of a good hurt. If we have the courage to be honest, that you know, and openly receive that admonishment rather than pushing it away. Can we take it in? Say, oh, okay, I wasn't aware of that. Thank you for pointing that out to me. For example, another scenario in my own life, in my own practice. It was a great gift, this particular admonishment. It was hard to see at the time, I must admit. Once again, I'm on retreat, one of these long retreats, and I'm doing my practice, and I think I'm doing really good practice. I was in a place where there was a lot of pleasant going on, a lot of really pleasant experience. The body is swaying side to side. The hands then begin to rise, and they too are just doing... I was in like an altered state. I don't know if any of you know what I'm talking about. An altered state, so my body swims, my hands then are raised too, and my hands are now doing this. And I think I'm doing really good practice. I think this must be pretty deep. This must be really deep. So I go for an interview, my teacher, and describe to him what's happening. And he says to me, Annie, this is not what the Buddha taught. This is not the practice, that's going to take you to liberation. It was a shock. It really was a shock to hear him say that. So then he said, watch very carefully what's going on as this is happening. Note the pleasant. If it's pleasant, first he asked me, is it pleasant? I said, yes, it's very pleasant. He said, well, you want to note that. Pleasant. You want to note pleasant. Then he said, then you must note the intention. Note the intention for the body to move, to sway side to side, and then the hands to raise. You want to note that, the intention as it's about to happen. Because I swore blind it was happening by itself, of course. I wasn't doing it. He said, note it. Just watch very carefully. So I began to do this. Sure enough, I saw that there was an intention. Especially the whole hands raised bit and then the inclining side to side. I began to watch it, and through that, just through watching it very carefully, it receded. But it took me quite a while. I was kind of thrown. But at the end of it all, I was very, very grateful that he had pointed it out in quite a kind of a stern way. In fact, I was so grateful that what arose for me was the feeling that I could have kissed his feet. There was so much gratitude. Because I was pulled back onto the right path that was going to allow for a deepening momentum of my practice, because now I was basically bringing in mindfulness, bringing mindfulness in to allow for the forward movement of my practice once more. So this is one kind of admonishment that we can have that can be quite difficult to receive. But if we can be open to it, that will allow for our practice to continue. If we can take in the instruction, it will allow for our practice to continue, and the sense of gratitude for the instruction that's been given to us. I'm only going to give one example of the admonishments I've received, but I've received quite a few. Because really what we're talking about, it's about humility. It's about the humility to be able to take in that admonishment. Not what, you know, what are you, who do you think you are kind of correcting me? Can we take it in? Just hear it fully. All right, let me take a closer look. So that the heart is open to be able to receive it. So that it does come from that place of humility. Because the back side of humility, when there's, you know, it's not the strong sense of self and me, I'm right, and, you know, don't tell me what to do. The less there is of the strong sense of self, the more room there is for genuine humility to be there. And the back side of humility has gratitude in it. It's there. We appreciate it from a place of humility. When my mother was dying, my mother died of cancer about 12 years ago now, and she was in her early 60s, I think she was 63 or 64, but in the process of her dying, she used to go to a support group, and I would, when I was out in South Africa visiting, I would take her to the support group and then pick her up afterwards. And one time she said to me, Annie, you know, when I go to these support groups, I see so many young people in their 20s or their 30s there, and I feel so grateful that I have had 63 or 64 years of life. When I see these young people, I feel so much for them and the shortness of their life, and feel really grateful for what I have had. And I thought this was such a beautiful attitude to have at her, the time of her death, rather than coming from the attitude of wanting more. She was coming from a place of gratitude. And for me, that was a lesson. it was a lesson she gave me, for which I feel gratitude. Hopefully when I die, I may have that attitude too, of gratitude rather than wanting. Is it possible for us to learn to see everyone and everything in life as our teacher? Why not? Because if we can receive life in this way, if we're receptive to it, then we do feel grateful rather than resentful. So for each of us, we take the Dharma as our refuge, and then within that, we each find our own particular area of growth, of letting go or of ripening in our practice, that might be necessary for each of us at any given time in our practice and in our lives. And the only way we're going to know what that specific area of growth in our practice will be because of mindfulness, because of awareness. So for example, perhaps we realize that we need to spend a little bit more time alone. Or it may be the opposite. Perhaps we realize that in our life we need to be more engaged in the world. Perhaps it's that we need to be more physically active. Or the opposite. Perhaps we need to put our feet up, relax, and just watch the clouds going by more. Or it might be that we need to learn to be more kind with our family, or some area of our speech, for example. So this is what I mean. For each of us, there may be a specific area of growth for us in our practice. In my own practice, I began to realize this again on one of these long retreats. It was the end of a particularly difficult retreat where I had had a lot of fear. It was almost as though the feeling of a lightning bolt would come out of the sky and incinerate me simply for being a human being. That was the kind of fear that was there. It was like I felt like I had no right to be on the planet. And my practice on this particular retreat had included spending a lot of time at a pond that was near the retreat center. A couple of hundred yards away, I would sit at this pond, and I would also watch two dogs playing there. There was a house close by and there were two dogs that used to play. And while I was sitting there, on many of these days over the unfolding of the retreat, and watching these dogs, I began to see how carefree they were and unselfconscious just in their playing in life and how they were really enjoying themselves. And out of that, I slowly began to feel, just out of watching them, that perhaps it was okay for me to be a human being. And then perhaps it was okay for me to maybe learn to relax on the planet too. And maybe I could learn to be a little bit more playful too, just like those dogs. And that I wasn't going to be, you know, get into trouble for being a human being. This was the area of practice that I saw was necessary for me when I went back out into the world. This is what I took with me. So when I went back home, I began to spend a lot of time, this is when I lived in London, I began to spend a lot of time in a park. Now this park was in the midst of a huge forest that had been, in the center of this forest, had been cut open, cut out, the trees had been removed, and so there was this big open grass field where people would go over the weekends with their kids, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old and so on. And parents would be there playing with their children, cricket and soccer, very British. And so I would go and sit on the edge of this playing field and just watch the children and the parents playing with each other. And just the simple unfolding of ordinary, worldly, joyful family togetherness, playing these games together. They were just laughing and enjoying each other. And this became my practice on a daily basis for several months. And out of this a deeper relaxing, a deeper trusting in life, a feeling that it was okay for me to be a human being, and that it was okay for me too to have some fun in life, some ordinary worldly fun, and actually learn to play the game of life. And then out of this, once again, a deep gratitude for the Dharma began to arise within me. And it arose as a result of seeing the scope of the Dharma. When we see the scope of the Dharma and that it doesn't narrow or limit our lives, but really it brings an ease of mind through our growing understanding, and it also brings an expansiveness into our life. Out of this, a deep gratitude arises because we really see how wide open the Dharma is and how inclusive it is. It doesn't narrow our lives at all. So it would be really wonderful if we could learn to see life as an offering. Offering goodness, offering wholesomeness to the world for the benefit of all beings. And then too, perhaps we could learn to see life as a gift from which to learn from on the path to genuine freedom. Can we see life as a gift from which we can learn? And out of this, let this be our path to freedom. There's nothing stopping us from living the Dharma in this way, except ourselves. So we can feel a gratitude for the Dharma, because the more we're aware of ourselves and our own process, the deeper, the wider we see the scope of the Dharma. And out of that, once again, a deepening gratitude wells up in the heart. So let's sit together quietly for a moment or two.